This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com. Boost muscle growth and blow charge body fat at TurbulenceTraining.com. BlackStarLabs.com. Use the code FIT10 to save 10% on all your Blackstar Lab orders. And also by RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. High octane corrective exercise and performance enhancement at RobertsonTrainingSystems.com. Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 67. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and along with me for co-host this week is everyone's favorite and soon-to-be birthday boy, Jimmy Smith. Just had to throw that in there, Jimmy, and you can check out Jimmy's stuff at jimmysmithtraining.com and also jimmysmithtraining.blogspot.com. What's up, Jimmy?
Nothing, Kev. How are you? Thanks for the little birthday shout-out.
Yeah, man. What are you, 14 or 15 now?
Yeah, I turn 25 tomorrow on Monday, so that's okay. Enough of the smart-ass comments.
All right, well, let's jump right into it because I think a lot of our audience really knows what we're going to be talking about this week. And with us this week as our special guest is Anthony Roberts. You can check out his site at anthony-roberts.com. And many out there may already know Anthony. Anthony has been researching anabolic steroids for over a decade and is the author of Amazon.com's best-selling anabolic steroid reference book, Anabolic Steroids: Ultimate Research Guide. In addition, he has since written the groundbreaking ebook titled Beyond Steroids. He began his research at the age of 17 while he was a competitive martial artist, ultimately winning a silver medal in the state martial arts tournament in the black belt division. And Anthony has been writing for iSteroids, steroid.com, Elite Fitness, MezoRx, T-Nation, and Mind and Muscle. And as a trainer, he's also a consultant and has helped athletes at all levels of competition, including professional bodybuilders, MMA competitors, powerlifters, and even figure competitors. So, Anthony, I hope I did you justice right there. I did my best. But without further ado, welcome to the show, man.
How's it going, man?
Pretty good. It's a huge pleasure to get you on. And I think a lot of people out there know the topic that we're going to be talking about this week. We're going to jump into that in a second, but there's a couple of quick things I just want to hit on before we jump into that. First off, I'm going to be attending a seminar on October 6th in Rhode Island. And I don't know, Jimmy, I know you're not going to be there. It's kind of late notice for me to ask you about it. But if anyone's going to be checking out that seminar on October 6th, I know Eric Cressy is going to be presenting, and Carl Valley, who's been on the show and also the FitCast Insider. It's worth checking out. I'll have a link for all the information in regards to the seminar on the site. It's I think it's going to be $155 or something like that. But again, I'll have all of that information up for you on the site. But Anthony, we're here to talk about really what some people tend to see as the dark side of the fitness industry, and that is just not only testosterone boosters, legal and illegal. And I just think we should first start off by talking about what natural testosterone boosters are out there, and really what you recommend, like what works and what doesn't.
All right. Well, I'll preface that by saying I'm, completely sort of a biased candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Because I designed supplements for Protein Factory, and my first one was a testosterone booster, so you can sort of call it maybe a financial bias, but more that I'm just proud of my first supplement. That being said, I do have a vested interest, but I'll go over the most popular quote-unquote testosterone booster is likely Tribulus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people have been citing this study that was done like sometime in the 50s, like in Bulgaria. I've never actually seen the study translated to English, and my Bulgarian is not that great. So I've never seen a study that shows tribulus increases testosterone. I've seen several studies that show that tribulus does nothing to increase testosterone. And it is, however, a pretty decent libido booster for most people. So, unfortunately, libido is not a great measure of whether or not your testosterone is going up.
Anthony, what do you think of tribulus? Oh, I'm sorry to cut you off.
Oh, no. What's that?
I was going to say, have you seen any of the research? A lot of stuff's coming about tribulus now having blood glucose lowering effects.
Yeah, I have. That's sort of interesting. I mean that's an interesting sort of property of it. I think once people stop researching it, as a testosterone booster, because I think the last study I read about that was 2005, and you know it's not doing much, but I think as an herb, it probably has a lot of benefits.
Yeah. I think when you look within a lot of other cultures, they use it as like a healthy herb. They use it for weight loss, and they use it for just general overall feelings of well-being, which obviously you will get, when your libido is spiked. So I think it definitely has some very positive benefits to it. I just think we kind of have to center how we're looking at it for. I think we've been stuck on looking at the older research and, hitting our head against the wall there. I mean, where if you look at the new stuff and you see that it can potentially lower blood glucose, which is going to, in effect, help you lose body fat, help you increase lean muscle mass because our nutrients are going to be stored better. I mean, I think that's very promising as well.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things, like you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater and kind of say like, well, it doesn't really do that much for anything but libido. Like, well, we don't know that. I mean, there's the blood glucose effect and, they sort of, I bet if you looked at immune function, it would probably do something there. So I'd really like to see more research done on it. And it's cheap. I mean, you're not spending a lot on it,
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's not like it's breaking the bank to get a bottle if it's doing something,
Yeah, I think that's another benefit of it is that it can boost your libido. It can potentially lower your blood glucose. So, I mean, it's really not that expensive of a supplement out there. You obviously want to go with, good companies' versions of it because again, there's a lot of crap out there. So like, you want to go with stuff like BioTest version of Tribulus, and get on that because like you said, it's a really good add-on because it's not breaking the bank. It's not like some of these new pro hormones that are costing you $60-$70 a pop.
Yeah, I mean, what is I think BioTest probably has a great Tribulus product. I think it's called Tribex Gold or something.
Yeah.
And I mean, the company puts what they're supposed to put in the bottle, in the right dose. And there's never been any question about that. So, like, if I were to use Tribulus, I would likely use BioTest for sure.
Yeah, because I think especially when you deal with herbs, dealing with testosterone, there's a lot of crap that goes out there. Like, people will tell you that, various ginsengs can positively affect your testosterone to estrogen ratio. And it's like if you go and buy, Joe's, ginseng, it's going to be crap. You have to go with...
Oh, absolutely.
Especially when you're dealing with herbs. Creatine, monohydrate, BCAAs, protein, that's a different story. But when you're going with herbs, you really need to be careful because there can be a lot of dirt out there.
Well, typically, and I see this, the pattern with herbs, right, is someone comes out, someone finds out that an herb does something. And you can't patent herbs.
Yeah.
You can't. I mean, they occur in nature, so you're stuck. So you come out with a product, and your herb does what it's supposed to, and then people want to copy it. But why would someone buy Joe's, ginseng over the first brand, the industry sort of leader? And then, so Joe says, well, mine is purified extract, and so on and so on. And then someone else says mine comes from the deep, dark jungles of wherever, and it's the best form of it, and basically it's if it's the herb, it's the herb. I mean, the marketing machine just starts going, oh, we have this saponin extract, blah blah blah, this procedure of getting it, and really if you just go with a quality brand, and I'll use BioTest as the example for Tribulus, it's going to do what it's supposed to do, for libido, and it's going to have what it's supposed to have in each pill.
Yeah, I think that's the best offer. Like, don't buy your herbs at CVS. That's the take-home lesson from this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I wouldn't, I mean, and again, it's, you know, with tribulus, it's kind of cheap. There's another sort of interesting natural testosterone boost, or it's sold that way, and it has potential as one, but it's, ZMA is pretty popular.
Yeah.
Now, ZMA is really interesting to me because ZMA was sort of first marketed by Victor Conti of Balco.
Yeah.
And the ZMA, you know, that's what all of his athletes who were doing steroids said they were doing, ZMA. Mm-hmm. You know, they were breaking world records saying, yeah, it's a zinc, magnesium, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, Barry Bonds in Muscle and Fitness in a ZMA hat and shirt. I mean, that's how he paid them. He made his, he literally, if you read the book Game of Shadows, he made his guys wear, like, tank tops in their advertisements that said ZMA on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that was, and, Justin Gatlin, I mean, one of the things that cracks me up is Justin Gatlin was on the cover I think it was Gatlin, it could have been Green, was on the cover of, you know, All Natural Bodybuilding magazine. He was, like, breaking world records using undetectable steroids, and a member of, you know, I kid you not, the ZMA Running Club, which was what the those yep. track athletes were a part
yeah.
of there.
Yeah,
their
little corporation. Really took ZMA, yeah.
Well, you know what, it could... the study everyone points to was, you know, was it did boost testosterone in, I believe they were elite, an elite combat unit in training.
Yeah.
And they were severely zinc deficient, and they took, you know, zinc, and it increased their testosterone levels, which makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know that zinc is... sort of doing, or ZMA, you know, is doing that much. And ZMA was sort of a big marketing scam because, I mean, basically, they were saying, no, you can't just use zinc and magnesium for $8 for a month supply. Like, you need it combined in this ratio with this, blah, blah, blah. That's really not true. I mean, you can just use zinc and magnesium.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the most part, if you're an athlete and you're training reasonably hard, you're going to be deficient in a lot of, you know, minerals that you're not, you know, that you're not adding supplementally into your diet. So it's worthwhile for a lot of people, but it's not, you're not going to start taking ZMA and break Ted Williams' home run record.
Yeah, I mean, no. I think, did Ted Williams have a home run record?
No, you're not going to break any home run record. You're not going to break Roger Maris's on ZMA.
Yeah, I'm just messing with you. I think the thing with ZMA is that, especially like if you look at all the quote unquote studies that show you shouldn't work out more than 45 minutes because cortisol peaks. Well, all those studies were done with people in a fasted state. If anybody's
right.
smart, if anybody's been reading any of, you know, Anthony's training articles, mine, Keith's, Tony's, Alan's, Eric's, you don't train on an empty stomach, okay? So if you wake up, if you have protein, I don't care if how. You know, the ability to spike your blood glucose that BCAAs do, it's better than having anything in your stomach. So if you're not with an empty stomach, your cortisol isn't going to be through the roof. When that 45
yeah,
minutes happens, it's not going to be through the roof. And like you said with ZMA, that's the issue that happened. These guys were in the field. They were severely, severely depleted. And that changed the ballgame. So I think when we're looking at research, especially when factors affect our testosterone, you have to look at what the other factors of the research. You can't just read an abstract because we all know they're free. I think that tells the whole story. And when you look at the pure biochemistry of the body, you see that magnesium's involved in something like over 350 enzyme processes in the body. It's
yeah.
not just a hormonal supplement. Zinc and magnesium is something you need to be taking every single day. So if maybe it doesn't raise my testosterone, and if, to be honest, I don't even sleep better on it. A lot of people will report they sleep better on it. It's just a supplement you need to take because you're going to look at, again, zinc is a nutrient that, when combined with other nutrients, just makes them work better. It's a very synergistic nutrient. And magnesium, again, is going to affect your blood sugar, factors like that. So I think when you look at zinc and magnesium, we need to stop looking at it like a supplement to make me pack on muscle mass. It won't. If it makes you sleep better, fine. But you need it to make everything else work better. Like everything else, you have to go with trusted brands. I mean, there's a thing called a zinc tally test where you swish a substance around in your mouth, and if you have no taste, you're deficient in zinc. And a lot of people will test deficient in zinc right away just because they're not taking the quality zincs. Some zincs and some magnesiums are absorbed in the body better than others, so you have to look at like your magnesium glycinate, your zinc glycinate. So that's something else to look at, but you're better off going with quality brands. I wouldn't be so concerned. I don't take a zinc glycinate or magnesium glycinate. I take other forms, but I take it from trusted brands. I take it from like a BioTest, or I take stuff like a Now brand, things like that. So that's just another area you have to look into.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing too is, you know, I've taken it. Doesn't help me rest better, but I mean, magnesium's involved in, I mean, muscle contraction and a lot of stuff. I mean, that alone, you know, the fact that magnesium is heavily involved in muscle contraction should tell people, okay, if I'm going to be training, you know, with something that contracts my muscles, i.e. anything, magnesium's important. the next thing
That's the thing. Is if you look at like a lot of the supplement drinks out there, they tote zinc as something that's going to help you. You know, they say, oh, we put zinc in there, it's going to be anabolic amplifier. I think one place advertises it, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think zinc is good. I think zinc is good, and I think most people are going to be deficient in zinc. I mean, sure. If they're training hard. I mean, the first test booster I came out with, I put zinc in it, not so much, you know, because I think it's going to be some miracle, you know, cure. But first of all, it does help people sleep better. Not me.
Yeah,
it does help people sleep better, though. And, you know, the other thing is that people are going to be training hard, you know, hopefully when, you know, they're buying a product like mine. And I think they're going to be zinc deficient. But, you know, honestly, I put too much zinc in it at first, and people were getting upset stomachs.
Yeah,
so that's another thing with zinc. You can, you know, you can easily get an upset stomach on it.
Yeah.
So that's CMA. There's another thing called Longjack. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It shows some degree of anabolism, but it shows that in rodents that were, I believe, injected with the substance. Okay? Now, this is, I looked up about, I think there's about 3 or 4 pages of published medical journal studies on Longjack. And it has shown some sort of anabolic effects in rodents, but it, as I recall, it was an absurdly high dose and it was injected. The other thing, it's claimed to increase testosterone. There's nothing in any peer-reviewed medical journals that shows that it actually increases testosterone. Now, it does increase libido. There's nothing I found showing it increases testosterone. Now, I make the note in a peer-reviewed medical journal because there's a company that puts out something called LJ100 that, again, is the most purified form, you know, of blah, 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 you know, hand-picked by the indigenous people of somewhere or other, you know, and blessed by the tribal shaman and all this other stuff. And they claim that there was a study done in Malaysia. The study is not found in any reputable, peer-reviewed medical journal. It's found on their website, and they funded it.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's terrible. I mean, there's more flaws and sort of design flaws and stuff like that going on than anything I've ever read. You know, it's got some charts and it kind of looks official, but I mean, it's pretty dodgy. So it could have some anabolic effect. I've only seen it in very high doses. It definitely has a libido enhancing effect. There's about 20 studies saying that. But as far as is that anabolic effect from boosting testosterone? The verdict, the jury's kind of out on that one.
Yeah, sure. And I think people need to understand the difference between libido boosting and testosterone boosting. I mean, one just is going to help you feel better. The other is going to actually add muscle mass on you. And I think
and the thing about it is like, okay, like libido increase, like, all right, like estrogen will boost your libido too. I mean,
Yohimbine will boost your libido, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and estrogen, again, estrogen is, you know, estrogen does have anabolic effects, but you definitely don't want to just start, you know, popping birth control pills.
Yeah.
So estrogen will increase it. Dopamine will increase your libido.
Yeah.
A lot of things will increase your libido without, you know, giving you an increase in testosterone. So that's one of those things. And some things will decrease your libido while increasing testosterone. I'm thinking mainly of very severe aromatase inhibitors. Something like a letrozole, okay, yeah. Kills people's libido, but it jacks their testosterone up. So, testosterone, really, although an increase in testosterone levels will usually give you an increase in libido, it's neither a sort of a necessary nor sufficient clause to say that it will. Because some things will increase test with a decline in libido. So, I mean, it's a really poor indicator.
No, I was going to say, I 100% agree with you.
Yeah, the last herbal one that I think, there's some other stuff that's out there that people kind of say, boost testosterone. But I mean, I think those are the three main ones. If you look at sales, anything that'll decrease your estrogen will also increase your testosterone, for the most part, because obviously, testosterone works on your negative feedback loop. So when testosterone levels go up, it aromatizes to estrogen, and estrogen is inhibitive towards the production of testosterone. So if you cut out some estrogen, you're going to raise testosterone. So all of the herbal and natural estrogen reducers will also usually have the side effect of raising testosterone. The final one I'll touch on. There's another one. There's some stuff that'll increase your free testosterone. So I'm thinking mainly of I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but stinging nettle.
Yeah, it's supposed to unlock the sex hormone binding.
Yeah, most of your testosterone is bound to sex hormone binding globulin and carrier proteins. So it's not biologically available. It's not doing anything to build muscle and all that stuff. So stinging nettle, and there's certain ligands of it, the divinyl and all that, they will, as I understand it, competitively bind to sex hormone binding globulin, thereby allowing more testosterone to remain free and biologically active. That stuff is pretty good. People get good results with it. And, I think that's the main, that's really the main thing to me, with the testosterone boosters, is like, are people gaining muscle and strength off of them? I mean, like, who cares? I've never heard anyone say, yeah, I took tribulus, I got huge.
Yeah,
I mean, who cares? What the research says if it's not working for people.
I think the issue is people need to understand that when they're taking these supplements, diet has a big part in it. And I know we harp on that all the time, but if you look at how carbohydrates obviously affect your insulin level and thus affect your free testosterone, which gets bound up,
right.
You have to understand you can't just take these products that are supposed to unbind that free testosterone because. Real quickly to explain it is free testosterone is what matters. I really don't care when clients come to me and show me their total testosterone.
Right.
I don't really care about that per se. I care about their free testosterone and how
right.
much free testosterone they have because that determines, again, the muscle mass and the anabolic effects. But you have to look at how diet's going to affect that, okay? Now, if we're on a carbohydrate, high carbohydrate diet for too long, and if we're on a low carbohydrate diet for too long, it's going to lock up that free test. So you can take all the stinging nettles and all those because there's – I forget the company. I think it may have been Designer Supplements that makes a free testosterone.
Yeah, I believe they were the first. So I mean,
yeah, Activate.
A little bit of credit actually should go their way because I think they, I always kind of think that it's great when someone comes out with something new.
Yeah.
And they were the first to do that Divinol, and people get good results off of it. So
yeah. I mean, people love that, and I think if you're on a good diet where your carbohydrates are structured, that's going to have. I don't want to say it'll double the effect, but it'll have results like that. But people need to realize that when you're on these supplements, you have to understand that if our free testosterone is bound up because of our nutrition, it's going to be that much harder. So you can't just point at people that use stuff and say they're on stuff. They're doing a lot of other things too. So
and I think stuff like carb cycling would probably be beneficial with a lot of these supplements. And obviously like high protein. I mean, you want to you know, you want to keep your thyroid working well, because again, that affects SHBG, and you know, there's a lot of stuff going on that really, yeah, people take supplements and think this will just have this effect, and then they sort of don't realize their diet and a lot of other things are going to play into it. So there's the stinging nettle stuff. The product I came out with contains Fidogia. That's sort of to me was a very interesting product. There was a study in 2005 in the Asian Journal of Andrology, and basically it showed that the test subjects, which were, you know, lab rats, given this product, were they had a dose dependent increase in their testosterone and LH, which is a precursor to testosterone. So, you know, I sort of thought it didn't exist on the market yet. There was no Fidogia supplements. So I thought, you know, this is unique. It's going to boost testosterone. So, I worked with Protein Factory to bring that out. Now there's three on the market.
Yeah.
So I came out with the first one, which, which sold very well. We have some blood work from one guy that showed like 1,000% increase. He was hypogonadal, though, so I mean, when you go from a 38 to a 380, you know, that's not, it's 1,000%, but, you know, again, I'm sort of, you know, talking about the numbers in the best way, you know?
Yeah.
But a lot of people are very happy with Fidogia. The other Fidogia products on the market, one of them contains ZMA, as well, whereas mine just contains zinc and vitamin E, because again, I don't think you need the expensive ZMA. The other one, and this is not a comment about the product per se, but the other Fidogia product on the market is in a proprietary blend. Are you familiar with what that means in the supplement industry?
Yeah, basically, if people don't understand what it means, is they take a couple supplements and throw it in.
That's exactly what it means. Probably, it's kind of the weirdest thing, I think, in the supplement world, that you don't have to tell people how much of each thing is in there.
Yeah.
I think it's exceptionally sort of a deceptive tactic.
Yeah, it's worse now, because, you know, a year or two ago, they were telling you what was in the blend. They were saying it's, 50 milligrams of caffeine and 500 milligrams of tyrosine. They were telling you what's in it, and now they just tell you it's a compound. They say it's like the pro-anabolic amplifier compound, 3 grams. They don't even tell you what the hell's in it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, too, for marketing, if you want, and I haven't done this with, any of my products, and I won't, but for marketing purposes, I guess people come up with some name, like some catchy name, like, pro-anabolic, super-duper compound, whatever, and then they make it a proprietary blend, so you have no idea how much of anything's in it. I mean, you're paying the same for my product as you are for the second, I think this is the third sort of Fidogia product. I think they're pretty equal in price. But the third one is a proprietary blend, and Fidogia is not the first ingredient. So the ingredients need to be listed by concentration in descending order. So you're actually getting, a couple other ingredients at a higher dose. But again, we don't know how much. We know that there's like, say, 500 total milligrams of whatever the blend is. So I think that's one of the things people need to look at, too, when they're buying any testosterone booster, is see if they give you the ingredient, like the amounts. Because it's a bit deceptive not to.
Anthony. I just want to jump in and just for the listeners, where can they pick up your product?
All right, the product is called Myogenix. It's Myogenx, and they could get it at proteinfactory.com.
Okay.
Bodybuilding.com also carries it. DPSNutrition.net. Tons of places carry it. Actually, it was in the last time I checked, it was like somewhere in bodybuilding.com, sort of top, maybe 15% of their test boosters. But the stuff that was beating it was like the stuff that doesn't boost test, like sort of the ZMAs and the tribulus, you know.
Yeah.
So it's called Myogenics from ProteinFactory.com. And like I said, I saw a bunch of other Fidoja products come out, and I think we're going to see a lot more in the coming years.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a new player, but I think worthy of being mentioned. You know, the research, again, is in mice, but within 5 days they got a 200 to 600% increase depending on dose.
That's awesome.
And certainly it's been looking that way with the majority of people who have tried it and gotten blood work have said, you know, yeah, this stuff really, you know, really works. So that's nice to have the blood work. And the other thing is that the people using it are typically guys who are coming off a cycle of steroids.
Yeah.
And they're very good and very harsh critics because, you know, they were just doing something that worked.
Yeah.
You know, and they are very sort of in tune with, you know, how much of their gains they're losing. And, you know, the natural bodybuilders and natural guys who have tried the product on its own, you know, they're very in tune with, you know, is this working? Which is kind of a great thing because people will really ditch a product if it's not doing anything.
Sure.
If you buy a product, it doesn't do anything for a month, you're not buying it again.
Yeah.
So those are the main test boosters, I think, that are herbs and minerals and stuff.
Cool, that's good stuff. Anthony, let's switch over to the let's go to the estrogen reducers and the thyroid enhancers before we get into the prohormone aspect, because I know a lot of people, especially we have a couple guys now who email us frequently about the show and are competing in bodybuilding contests. So obviously when you're trying to lose body fat, you want to keep your thyroid going. You want to keep your thyroid happy. So just go into a couple of those supplements now if you don't mind.
Okay, well, the estrogen reducers, yeah. You know, when I first sort of started researching steroids, I was like, okay, where are the side effects coming from? You know, and I said, all right, the side effects are coming from, you know, some aromatization, just conversion to estrogen. I said, all right, the simple solution is to take an aromatase inhibitor. But really, that's not the simple solution. I mean, there's a lot of positive effects that estrogen has. Estrogen's going to help your immune system. It's going to help your cognitive function. It's going to, you know, keep your joint integrity, your bone integrity. So estrogen isn't something you want to just cut completely out. Now, if you're a pre-contest bodybuilder, you're using, you know, nutritional supplements to help, you know, get ripped for a contest, all that's out the door.
Yeah.
You need to get ripped. You need to drop that water. You need to basically get rid of your estrogen, you know? I mean, it's a temporary thing. It's extreme, but they're going to need to do that. You know, basically, the estrogen reducers are pretty much working by inhibiting the aromatase enzyme. You can do that one of two ways. One way is you can reversibly bind to it, which means the aromatase inhibitor will bind to the aromatase, and when you stop taking it, it will not be there anymore, and you'll experience a bit of a rebound in estrogen.
Yeah.
Okay. The other way is it can irreversibly bind, in which case your body will develop more enzymes, but the ones that have been bound to, they're gone forever. They're completely done. That's a suicidal aromatase inhibitor, and stuff like ATD is a suicidal aromatase inhibitor.
Yeah.
Stuff like percinidin, that's a reversible. So you basically have the two different types. But again, if you're pre-contest bodybuilder, you need to get rid of all that estrogen, you know, as much as you can. And again, anything that lowers your estrogen is going to increase your testosterone. I think you know, resveratrol has some effects, you know, for potentially raising testosterone, and it's you know, shown to be a sort of lipolytic in people. It's gonna, you know, help burn a bit of body fat. Stinging nettle, which I spoke about before, that's actually an aromatase inhibitor as well. you know, procyanidin is grapeseed extract, and as far as I've seen, it's the only herbal aromatase inhibitor that has been compared to the prescription drug letrozole, which is very, very potent. I've seen guys use not procyanidin per se, but I came out with a product that, you know, was complementary to Myogenics. It's, you know, contains procyanidin in a very high dose. I've seen guys use it to reverse gyno, to reverse the development of you know, breast tissue, you know, from the estrogen. But I've also seen guys use way too much and their joints take a pounding because they, you know, lowering your estrogen too much is gonna really, really hurt your joints. And you know, it's gonna compromise your bone integrity. So that's you know, one of the dangers in reducing too much estrogen.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. A lot of times, like, people come to me and they either come with blood work or I'm just looking at their body and say that their cortisol is too high. So there's a lot of supplements out there that blunt it. I'd rather figure out what's causing the rise, what's causing the drop. Let's fix that instead of just trying to overall knock everything out. And that's the problem with a lot of these hormonal supplements. It's enhanced test by 110% or knockout estrogen or whatever. Again, we have to remember biochemistry is a very delicate process. So figure out what the offending issue is and how to correct it instead of totally trying to knock it out. So what's your take on like the natural thyroid enhancer, things like L-tyrosine, selenium, products like that that people are using that have reported thyroid benefits?
Well, like sort of one of the interesting things about selenium is I think it's either macadamia nuts or Brazil nuts, but it's got some absurd amount in each one, something like, you know, 700 milligrams. Meanwhile, when you buy pills, they're like in microgram amounts.
Yeah.
You know, and I typically, like, and I don't have any, like, 100% research to back this up, but I typically think that if you can eat one, you know, macadamia nut or Brazil nut, whichever it is, you know, you're better off than taking a bunch of pills, you know, adding more pills to your...
Yeah. Your
daily amount. You know, some of the natural thyroid enhancers, like, you know, they have some promise, and, you know, but I really have never seen any blood work showing that they're doing what they're supposed to do. I mean, people will get blood work that says their thyroid's messed up, then they'll go on a natural thyroid enhancer like the Googlestrom's, and they'll just kind of go, oh yeah, you know, it's probably working. There's some product by, again, I'm familiar with the product line because obviously I've designed supplements for them. There's a product by Protein Factory called Zip. It's got a lot of ingredients with a lot of research behind it. I mean, I don't make a dime off that product, but I do happen to know people are very happy with it. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, the main thing, I think, is, you know, people are going to see results and be happy with the product. You know, all the research in the world, you know, it doesn't matter if it's not doing what it's supposed to. There are some really good, you know, products. Like, I haven't seen, like, iodine do anything for anyone. I mean, theoretically, it should work to help your thyroid. I just haven't seen it.
Yeah. I think the thyroid problem is that, again, diet is an issue. People are having high insulin spikes in their diet. And you look at even, like, a lot of doctors, no one really measures RT3, which is reversed T3,
yeah.
And that's a problem. Everybody looks at T3 to T4 conversion, and no one looks at RT3. When you start looking at RT3, the ball game changes. So, I mean, if people are having any thyroid issues out there, do yourself a favor, look into some information on RT3 and talk to your physician about that. But there's a lot of other factors. So things like iodine, or I know they're giving women high amounts of iron and saying that that's going to affect the thyroid too now. So,
I wrote an article, actually, about sort of fixing your thyroid. Some female fertility medications actually will increase your thyroid.
Yeah.
An example is human chorionic gonadotropin. That resembles, you know, that sort of resembles the structure of you know, a thyroid stimulating hormone in the body. You know, the body recognizes it as being pretty close. And as will clomiphene citrate. So, you know, there's probably a bunch of others that are sort of, you know, natural and all that are going to work. I just don't think Someone with a very low thyroid, you know, taking a garbage shark full of selenium every day, it's not going to do that much.
Sure.
I think it's more like a quick, and like you said, you have to look at everything. Where's your glucose? What's your, you know, what's the entire thyroid panel look like? What kind of diet are you eating at the time, you know? Okay, you're on a low-carb diet. Well, you know, hey, guess what? Eat some carbs, you know?
Yeah, I mean, mercury, again, affects a lot, too. So, Anthony, why don't we get now right into the pro-hormone, the meat, and kind of what everybody was interested in? Because I know we have some listener questions. So, Kev, if you want to read those off.
Well, if you, I don't know if you just want to do a brief overview on pro-hormones, especially the evolution of pro-hormones over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'll go into that. Basically, what we have is I'll point to an issue of Muscle Media, okay? I think it was still Muscle Media 2000, where Dan DeShane wrote about pro-hormones for the first time. He didn't, you know, quote-unquote, discover them or, you know, sort of bring them to the market first. I mean, I guess that credit, you know, bringing them to the market was obviously Pat Arnold, of Balco fame recently, and you know, he's a pretty bright guy, and he basically, you know, must have dug up the research showing that you know, orally ingested andro products are going to convert, you know, to testosterone in the body. Now you might be surprised, but the conversion rate's very low for this. I consider this the first generation of andro products. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you have this sort of first androstendione, androstendiol, 19 nor, you know, 5 andro, whatever. That's the sort of the first generation. Really, the sort of the first thing that people said, all right, this is what we have to work with. The second generation I consider to be the sort of real shady, money-grubbing sort of generation of the pro-hormones. That's where it was basically the Wild West, you know. Anything that vaguely converted to testosterone in the body, people would you know, come out with, try to patent, you know, some odd variation, you know. That was really, I mean, and some of it was converting to very high amounts of estrogen, and people were getting a nice anabolic effect from the estrogen, you know. I mean, estrogen's going to help you, you know, help you grow muscle. People think of it as, you know, something to be avoided, and this female hormone, and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, when they give cattle steroids to make them bigger, typically it's always something with estrogen. It's testosterone and estrogen. It's trenbolone and estrogen. It's almost always got estrogen. That's the constant. So you have, you know, those products, the second generation. And at that time, I'd say people started messing around with the delivery methods, too. So some really shady companies were putting out liquid versions in sterile multi-use vials that were obviously meant to be injected, and they were saying it was sublingual, but they made it a point to say this is sterile, blah, blah, blah. That's a real sort of shady stuff. Then, you know, some people were adding, you know, psychodextrins to it. That was sort of a disappointing move, I think. Wasn't much going on. Some of them were sublingual, and then some were transdermal. The transdermal is never going to really have as good of an effect as, you know, taking something orally. The advantage, you know, speaking, you know, about pharmacokinetics, which is sort of the way the drug acts in the body, the advantage with a transdermal hormone or pro-hormone or steroid or anything is that you get a sustained release throughout the day. The disadvantage is that you're rubbing this shit all over your body. I am profoundly lazy and disinterested in rubbing something on my body a couple times a day.
How does it smell?
You know, there's different stuff on the market, and I'll point to a product that I happen to think is a very good testosterone booster. It's a blend of a couple decent products, and it's by Primordial Performance. It's Dermacrin and Dermacrin Sustain. They also have one of their products has some kind of raspberry ketone in it and some cinnamon, and it smells, from what I hear, very good. And so you basically have a nice testosterone booster that's got like a nice smell, and there's lipolytic activity for both of those two compounds, the cinnamon and the raspberry ketone.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, most of them don't really have a smell. But you know, you also get varying levels of sort of how long they stay around on your skin. So I mean, I've used transdermal products that stuck around on my skin for like an hour. So I mean, I couldn't put a shirt on for an hour. That's not practical, you know. And some transdermal products that I've used basically go right in. Again, though, like I'm lazy and I really don't want to be rubbing stuff, you know, and then not being able to put a shirt on for however long, and can't put something light on because it's going to stain it. That's just me. A lot of people love the Primordial Performance products. Although it's not a test booster, there's a, you know, Tarjex is a great product. You know, just for me, I don't like them. The other thing is, especially with the transdermal prohormones, you get varying degrees of skin irritation sometimes, depending on the carrier used. So Flogel is a very nice carrier, but some people use, like, you know, sort of high amounts of, you know, different stuff that's a bit harsh on the skin. Alcohol can be used as a transdermal carrier, but if you rub something that's got a lot of alcohol on your skin, it dries it out, makes it, you know, kind of nasty. So that's a mixed bag there. But anyway, that's the second generation where you started seeing all those, you know, sort of shady products and some different delivery methods. And I think we're in the third generation right now of pro hormones. And that's post legislation that was sort of banned a lot of pro hormones. So, you know, there's certain things that are banned outright, you know, and then there's specific things that are banned. So now people are really trying to, you know, come out with something that's going to be effective, like the, you know, first generation, which, you know, they were very effective. You know, so people want to come out with something that's going to be effective and, you know, something that's going to be legal, which wasn't a problem through the first and second generation of pro hormones.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have a lot of sort of savvy consumers that do, you know, try and figure out what they're going to drop $70 a bottle on. You know, I think they're very interested in you know, what they're spending their money on. I'd say stuff like probably mass tabs, you know, depending on how we want to define this generation of pro hormone. Mass tabs probably, you know, comes into that. Definitely the 3AD, probably the super draws. Those are all going to be in this third generation. Right now, I've actually been sort of contracted to work with a company called Custom Capsules on a couple pro hormone blends with them, which I don't think actually nobody knows about yet. So I guess now they do. yeah. No one actually knows about that yet. But yeah, I've been contracted to design some pro hormone stuff for Custom Capsules. Which is cool because I, you know, sort of did want to do that. But yeah, we're in the third generation where legality is a factor and effectiveness, because, you know what, $70 is a lot for the average guy, you know, to drop on pro hormones. And most people want to use more than the bottle recommended amount, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you could be looking at $100 a month just on one thing that's, you know, that you're hoping gives you a couple pounds of muscle. If you don't get those couple pounds, you're not using it next month.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, we have a much more savvy consumer, you know?
You even have the supplement companies now that go on message boards and say that if it's 300 milligrams a bottle, their testers are all using 500. Well, what the hell is it? You put 300 milligrams in the bottle, but you're telling everybody on the message boards that the testers are using 500 milligrams. You know,
yeah, you know, and that's something. First of all, I just discount anytime someone's like, I have given, you know, friends, you know, bottles of my products, you know, for free, just for them to try and, you know, whatever, just sometimes I'm giving, you know, a couple bottles a month to the same people because they like it and they keep using it. But most of the time when you have a tester who's getting something for free, I just don't, you know, who's, you know, required to keep some kind of log about it. I just don't trust what the guy's saying, to be 100% frank.
Yeah.
I mean, they're getting something for nothing, you know? Like, I'd like to see people sort of approach it more critically and say, you know, like, would you have paid $80 a bottle for this? Because that's the real test, not if it works. I mean, tons of stuff work, but is it worth the money? Is it, you know, is there something better? I just find, the other thing is, you know, like you said, they're taking a bit more, with Myogenics, you know, I think 6 caps a day is the recommended dose, depending on body weight. That's like for the average size American male, like 170 pounds or something.
Yeah.
So it's weight dependent, but yeah, a lot of people take double the dose and, you know, the whole thing about product testers is like 90% of the time when I've read a guy test a product, it was good. So that tells me what? Either 90% of the products on the market are good, which I know to be bullshit, or, you know, just the fact that 90% of the testers are full of shit, which is typically what I think.
Yeah.
There's definitely the dose thing. You know, you can look at $150 a month. You know, if you're using some of the doses that the testers are using for different products.
Yeah, and it's not going to make you look like the guy who's wrestling on Monday night on television. So that's what people have to realize is don't try to be as fooled as much. But I know Kev has a bunch of listener questions. Why don't we get into that?
Yeah, great. That'd be great.
Yeah, we're just going to throw out two of them tonight as we're kind of running short on time. But first off, this is from Jeff. Are there any valid times for the quote-unquote average Joe weightlifter to use steroids? If so, what are they?
Well, you know, that's sort of a weird question just because, you know, morally and ethically, I don't feel like, you know, the government should sort of restrict, you know, what we could put in our bodies. Mm-hmm. I mean, legally, obviously, is it worth the risk to, you know, for the average Joe weightlifter to gain 15 pounds? I mean, Grant, you know, what's the risk reward, you know, ratio? That's the first thing I'd consider. I mean, the other thing is, can you get a doctor's prescription? I mean, a 40-year-old guy most likely is going to be at the low end and can get a prescription, do things legally, get blood work. So I think that's the right time. Other than that, you know, you're looking at a very sort of dangerous, you know, area. To sort of be dabbling in anabolics like that, and it was an area that I was in for a mere decade or so of my life. But now, you know, I have a prescription, and I honestly wouldn't recommend the average Joe weightlifter gets involved with that unless they can do it right and legally.
Yeah, and I think you have to kind of ask why. Like, guys that want to look big for the club or look big on the beach, mm-hmm. why? I mean, you know,
I'm from New Jersey, so I mean...
Yeah, you're from Jersey. You're from Meathead Central, dude.
So, I mean, that's, you know, that's the answerable question, I guess, you know, if you
yeah,
went
I mean,
down
like,
the shore.
It's like, yeah, if you're trying to go down the shore or the beach or you want to look good in the club or whatever, unless you're going to the, you know, Mr. Olympia this weekend and, you know, you want to attract attention or, you know, be with all these quote-unquote fitness models who seem to only be with 260-pound guys. I don't know.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know about that either now. Yeah, I know.
What's that?
I think you have to ask yourself just why. Like, there's really no reason. A lot of guys will go to the extreme and they'll get dirt because they want to look big in the club. Like, you know, look at your training, look at your diet, look at your nutrition before you go into that. Like, I think, Anthony, you say this all the time. I think I saw this on your blog or one of your articles. I mean, like, every time someone asks you either about your steroid book or about steroid information, you ask them, like, when's the last nutrition book they read? Or what's the last...
Yeah, I say buy 5 books before you buy my steroid book. Buy 5 books split amongst training and diet before you buy a steroid book because that's the last thing that you should turn to.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of people... It's like, to me personally, the guys I know who are on... are the same people that want to get big but keep their abs year-round. So these guys don't take in. I mean, look, growing muscle is growing muscle. I don't really care about the research. Like, you need caloric excess majority of the time to build muscle and caloric decrease to the caloric deficit to lose body fat. So the thing is, like, these guys were scared to put 300 grams, 400 grams of carbohydrates in their body a day.
Yeah.
But yet wanted to juice to get big. Look, it doesn't work that way. Like, if you do that, you know, if you follow a good carb cycling approach or a high carb diet for a while, you'll gain muscle. Do it smart, don't gain fat. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
No, yeah, and unfortunately, it's not just the average Joe weightlifter that has that problem. Like, I would say the average Jane weightlifter has that problem, too.
Yeah, that's a factor not a lot of people are looking into now. I mean, I work with a couple female fitness competitors, and it's becoming harder and harder even on a natural level because, you know, if you compete 2 or 3 times a year, you don't know what your competitors are doing now. I mean, there's some natural fitness competitions I've been to female-wise in the area recently, and I don't believe that these chicks are all natural, to be honest with you.
Some of these girls are carrying, you know, 140, 150 pounds on stage with, like, zero body fat.
Yeah.
There's definitely some chemical enhancement going on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to offend the females that are listening to it when I say this, but looking at their glutes, you know, not trying to be a typical guy, trying to just be in the physique world, is that, like, there's no way these girls can make dramatic changes in the their glutes to how much they're ripped in a short period of time. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, the average Jane in professional physique competitions is pretty much turning into the average Joe, both in the way they look and, you know, the amounts of drugs they're using. So, I mean, that's unfortunate.
I'm gonna jump kind of off topic here, and just to all the listeners out there, from now on, when you sent in questions for our guests, please limit it to like 3 or 4 sentences. Like, I got a bunch that were 4 and 5 paragraphs long, and if you've ever listened to the show, you know I can't read that much before messing up considerably. So please try to keep it to between 2 and 3 or maybe 4 sentences. But also,
Anthony's popular. We got like 4 or 5 questions that were like 2 paragraphs, dude. Like,
no.
Well, you know what? Actually, I saw some of the questions. The only thing I would say about the questions is, you know, when you ask a question, end it with one of those squiggly things with the dot at the bottom. Like, because I sort of, you know, I got a look at some of them, and I couldn't tell where the question was.
Yeah.
These are completely copy-pasted. I did not alter them. So that's on our listeners' heads. But just summarizing one of the questions, basically in regards to post-cycle therapy, what do you think is the best SERM, or for everyone out there, selective estrogen receptor modulator to use, and at what kind of dosage would you recommend, in your opinion?
You know what? There's a lot of, you know, sort of next generation SERMs out there, and I'd like to recommend one of them. But unfortunately, you know, although the research does look promising for a lot of different, you know, newer SERMs, I still recommend Novadex or tamoxifen citrate because it's been used successfully for decades, and because more research is out there on it than anything else. So, you know, it's one thing to be on the cutting edge and be talking about all these other SERMs, but I mean, I don't see the reason to go with, to reinvent the wheel every time a new drug comes out. I mean, you have one that works. I think tamoxifen citrate is a really useful drug. You know, I read some articles concerning some potential toxicity with it, blah, blah, blah. The fact remains that nobody's ever experienced this. You know, I mean, yeah, potentially this, potentially that. And, you know, people look at these other drugs and say they have so much more potential than Novadex. Novadex could possibly have this side effect, but in the end, no one's ever suffered that side effect, and, you know, thousands of people have used it successfully. So I stick with Novadex as my recommendation for a SERM.
Fair enough. Well, I think we're gonna wrap up this week's show. Again, everyone out there, make sure to check out Anthony's site and also to check out Protein Factory. And I'll throw up links for not only Protein Factory and his site, but also you can get a whole listing of all Protein Factory's products at bodybuilding.com, among many other sites. But I'll make sure to throw up a link there, and you can just check out what they do have to offer. And I think that's going to wrap it up for us. Jimmy, do you have any parting thoughts?
No, it was a good show tonight. I enjoyed it.
No, yeah, it was a pleasure to be on, guys.
We'll love to have you on again. I think we'll wrap it up. We're about an hour in. So for episode number 67, I'm Kevin Larrabee.
I'm Jimmy Smith.
Anthony Roberts.
And we'll see you next week. Again, don't forget to check out thefickass.com. Check us out through iTunes, and we'll see you next time. Take care, everyone.